Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited to have it out in the world.
And the title of your book?
My new book is titled, The World Isn't the Size of Our Neighborhood Anymore.
Tell me about the title.
So the title comes from a poem in the collection titled Monsoon Season. And to me, that poem is really the heart of the collection. I think one thing that I've learned throughout my time writing is, for me, when I'm putting together a collection, it works best, and I, for some reason this is always natural to me, I build the heart and then build the body around it. The monsoon season is the heart of the collection, I think, and I kind of built the body, the rest of the book, around that one poem.
All right, very nice. Well, let me ask this question. What is poetry?
I think poetry is the personal. It's the visceral and the political. Like all art, I think that poetry is the ultimate form of expression and experience.
All right. So why is it important?
I think that especially today, especially now, it is so important to connect with other people. And I think that connecting with someone through art that you have created is just the most intimate you can get with someone. So I think that's why poetry is so important. We all need each other, especially right now.
Yes, I agree. Things are happening in this world that are just ultimately surreal. Very, very strange. Very, very strange. As you think about your work, and you've published more than one book, what are some of the predominant themes of your work?
I write a lot about growing up. So a lot of my poems are about the loss of innocence. And I also write a lot about masculinity. That's one topic I've been very interested in. I've been writing a lot about toxic masculinity and the ways in which my ideas about masculinity have changed as I've grown older.
All right. Well, what I'd like you to do is to share a piece of your work. Austin, are you with me? I'm sure Austin will be back. Sometimes there are technical problems. We're living in a world today where things are really, really strange and things happen. He is back. Hold on 1 second.
So sorry, I'm not really sure what happened there.
That's okay. Welcome back. I'm glad you made it back.
Thank you.
What I'd like you to do is to share a piece of your work.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'd like to start with the first poem in the book, which is titled A Trip Back Home. We're only 19, 7 years older than we should be, and 7 years younger than we have to be. We don't draw faces on the riverbanks anymore. Tonight seems like the kind of night where we should race each other to my favorite creek. Yes, of course I have a favorite creek. And reenact the tale of Despero with some pebbles and mud. Let's write an ode to the tadpoles, afraid to grow into their slimy skin, and ride our bikes to Steak and Shake. We'll split a steak burger and pop, and when we're as bubbly as lightning bugs finding love without swimming in a cheap pool of spilled beer. You'll look at me as if we could change the world with a well-timed joke, and I'll show you the lake house on the moon I bought with credit when I was young enough to still see a mirror in screen doors. Don't thank me for a perfect night just yet. Don't kiss me goodbye and call me on your way home. Don't tell me the night isn't a cloud for us to lie on. And don't build the next morning from newspaper scraps, sweat stains, and an alarm clock that reminds us that while time and money weren't born from the same womb, it seems like lately they've become one body with two heads who keep interrupting each other. Just close your eyes with your back turned to the setting sun. Sit with me in the middle of this green and gold cornfield and pray that our clock has a worse sense of direction than I do. Hold me tighter and tighter as our shadows come to life in a rain puddle of crows. Stand up and stretch. That's when we'll know it's another one of those quiet summer nights where we're the only kids crazy enough to still slow dance in each other's heartbeat. Thank you.
Do you sit and think through every word of every stanza, or do you write freely and allow the words to flow?
During my first draft, I always just let it come out. You know, I write whatever's on my mind, but when I'm editing, I try to be very precise about every word. So I think that editing is in itself an art form because it's narrowing down everything into your poem. It's whittling down your piece of art into something even more beautiful. So I take a lot of time with my edits, I think.
All right. So how does a poem begin for you? We talked about the editing piece. Does it begin with an idea, a form, or an image?
Both, actually. So a lot of times it's an idea. If I'm thinking about how I want to write something political, if I want to write something about the current state of our nation, it'll start with an idea. But oftentimes my poetry starts because of an experience I've had or from an
mm-hmm.
image. There's another poem in this book called I Don't Remember Being Born on Mars, and I became really obsessed with the idea of tar bubbles popping on the sidewalk during summer. I'm not sure if you've ever witnessed that. You know, it's really hot outside, and it's something in Arizona, I guess, but it's just so hot that, you know, the tar bubbles rise and pop all over the street sometimes, and it's very beautiful to watch because there's a little rainbow inside the tar bubble, and it just looks very pretty. And just thinking about my experiences as a child, you know, sitting out in the blistering heat, watching tar bubbles pop, and, you know, so sometimes it's a memory, too. I think poetry is really born from memories for me as well.
Well, would you mind sharing that particular piece of your work? I'd love to hear that poem.
I would love to, yeah. So this one's called I Don't Remember Being Born on Mars. I don't remember being born on Mars. All I do remember are the rainbows we found in tar bubbles on timeless summer evenings when the wind turned the rain to italics. If we strained our eyes in just the right way, it was easy to pretend we were locked in a staring contest with a trench coat detective that didn't want to be seen. I remember picking oranges and rolling them into McKellop Street, like little round hearts that just dreamed of making it into the bike lane. Some nights the cars would honk and sticky guts would paint our Converse. Other nights they'd drive past all our landmines without even knowing it, ensnared in a pop song on the radio like a sea turtle wearing the plastic noose of your six-pack of Bud Light. And I'd feel a little less human as the wind spit balls of pollen into my mouth. It's always raining somewhere in the universe. I remember wringing mud water from my baseball cap as you dragged our go-kart from the lake of rain in our backyard. That was the night the lake began to look less and less like the kind of swamp Johnny Quest would run through with Bandit, and I realized God is only alive if someone falls to their knees. I don't remember being born on Mars. All I do remember is the way the tar bubbles burst into nighttime all over the sidewalk. Thank you very much.
All right. Very nice. Very nice. You know, as you think back, what was an early experience where you learned that poetic language had power?
Ooh, an early experience. Well, I think all throughout my whole childhood, really, my parents took reading very seriously. So they introduced me to a lot of really cool authors when I was very young, and that's when I really fell in love with reading. But I think that I really fell in love with writing when I was a little older, and I needed a way to express myself and find a way to deal with all the, you know, everything going on in my head. I just felt very overwhelmed with anxiety and just everything going on in my head, so I needed a way to get that out in a positive way. So I turned to writing, and for me, that was the first time I saw the power that being creative could have on myself. And it wasn't until later that I realized, you know, what the power of writing could be on other people, you know, how I could help people with my writing. Because, you know, really that's my biggest goal, is to make an impact in the lives of others with the art that I've created.
All right, very nice, very nice. Share another piece of your work. I'm enjoying listening to you. Share another piece of your work.
Thank you so much. Well, okay, the next poem I think I'll read is the heart of the collection, as I was saying earlier. It's called Monsoon Season. The Arizona elements are released from their asylums in July. The wind flips through your favorite book and cries after reading the last poem. It rains and rains in warm, empathetic bursts, and unlike your cold, frightened rain, monsoon rain brings dead leaves back to life. It's the kind of rain that makes me profess my love under your window with a boombox. It's the kind of rain that flings doors off its hinges, then eases them back into place at dawn. The world isn't the size of our neighborhood anymore. We've seen starless nights where the moon went to visit Mars. We've held each other on the roof of my car and watched meteors fall from the sky but never hit the ground. Come, sip your black tea, guy turns to rotting peaches. Listen for the lovers pillow talking in the water running down our windows. As the light collects and puddles in the street, we can only hope the storm will last more than a couple minutes. Thank you.
Where do you write, Austin? Do you write in a specific place, or it's anywhere that you can find?
I really love to take walks late at night and with my notebook and write walking under the streetlights. I'm not really sure why, but I like to go outside, oftentimes barefoot, and because it's always nice weather or hot in Arizona.
Right.
And I'll have my notebook, and I'll just be walking around when the world is asleep, you know, under these streetlights in my neighborhood, or, you know, at ASU, there's a lot of streetlights on campus that are always on 24 hours a day, so there's lights. But yeah, I really love writing at night, but I think that whenever the muse hits me, whenever the idea strikes, wherever I am, I'll kind of let myself fall into that creative mindset, because I think that's kind of hard sometimes too, though, if you're, you know, dealing with other parts of life, to let yourself take a pause on everything and just be creative.
Yes, I agree. I agree 100%. You know, you mentioned earlier that your parents were great influences, and they introduced you to different writers. Who are some of those writers, and what makes them great in your eyes?
So the first writer that I really fell in love with was J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter series. And
yes,
that was just when I was very young, and I devoured all of those books. And I love the way that those books make me feel. You know, for me, the Harry Potter series is an escape, you know, and that's how it was when I was a kid. It was an escape from growing older, I think. And it just for 15 minutes or 20 minutes, it was an escape that let me just kind of sit back and enjoy being a child, you know.
What about poets? What poets influence you? What poets do you enjoy?
So the poet that has really influenced my political poetry is Terence Hayes. He wrote a collection of poetry entitled American Sonnets for My Past and Future Assassin, and I really love that collection. I'm not sure
what about
if you're familiar with his work.
No, I'm not, but tell me more about it.
The book is all about racism and masculinity and different political issues. And it's a collection of, I think it's 70 sonnets, and each sonnet is entitled the same thing. So each sonnet is called American Sonnet for My Past and Future Assassin. Collection, there are different ideas that are repeated and different images that come together in different poems, and each poem leads into the next, and it feels like a very cohesive collection. I haven't read it in a couple years, but I read it a couple years ago, and that's when I really fell in love with. I wanted to write about something that I felt was important.
Okay. So, I'm sorry. Continue.
No, that was, yeah. I really wanted to write about the issues in our country that I'm passionate about. And I think that Terrence Hayes kind of inspired me to do so.
Okay. Well, tell us about the issues that inspire you. Tell us about some of these issues that you want to write about, that you love writing about. What are some of these issues?
Yeah, so in my second collection, it's entitled Second Civil War. And it's a really small collection of political poetry that came out my freshman year of college. And Second Civil War is really a call to action for my generation to stand up to hate and injustice and vote. So, you know, there are poems in this collection about the gun violence epidemic, which I think, which I'm very passionate about, and voting and capitalism and racism and the migrant crisis. I think those are some of the poems in here. But I was able to read a couple of my poems at a March for Lives event.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really, really amazing experience for me because I was able to meet some of the Parkland students, and I got
yes.
to talk with them. And talking with them also really inspired me to want to use the art form that I love to make a difference in the world. So that I think that was kind of the turning point in my career as a student activist. That's kind of where I
yes.
started after talking with them and having, you know, one-on-one conversations with them. That was really, really amazing for me.
All right. Well, I commend you for your efforts in terms of working with others to bring about change. That is so important. That is so important. You know, as you think about some of the prevalent ingredients that go into the concoction we call a poem, what are the most important ingredients that go into this concoction that we call a poem? What goes into it? What makes it up?
I think that honesty, for me, is the most important aspect. You know, I've tried really just different kinds of poems, you know, just trying to figure out what it means for me to write a poem. But for me, you know, at the end of the day, just being honest in what I'm writing and, you know, finding a way to, you know, show an experience, I think, is for me the most important part of a poem.
Okay. All right, I understand. Well, look, let's take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Awesome.
We go back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I am here with Austin Davis, the author of the new book, The World Isn't the Size of Our Neighborhood Anymore. Austin, share another poem, please.
Hi, thank you. Thanks. Thank you very much. I'd love to. this next poem is called Words from a Student. Words from a Student. All the kids are picking flowers, but they wouldn't dare plant them. It's too late in the day for beauty to grow from nothing. There's not nearly enough time before the bullets will start to rain, like words of hate on a swing set, and the class will have to count the holes in the wall during math. When was the last time kids were this afraid? They should be scared of failing Tuesday's spelling quiz, waking up 5 minutes late and having to run after the bus, or running out of ink in their pens. They shouldn't be scared of getting shot up between classes, but I'd be scared as hell too, if guns were as prevalent in people's hands as racist jokes were in people's mouths, Confederate flags were on people's trucks, and thoughts and prayers were in people's minds. Look around a class of children. They've all seen the news. They've all heard their parents whispering in the light from the refrigerator late at night. Each student has thought about what it would feel like if one of these times their quarterly active shooter drill wasn't just pretend, and they were huddled in the closet in fear for real. Each teacher has wondered at one point or another if they might have to shed their skin and become a shield to save a child's life. A child with a mom and a dad. A child with a brother and a sister. A child who walks the dog after dinner and plays with roly-polies during recess. A child with skin and blood and eyes and tears. A child who thinks about the stars and likes banana popsicles, even though no one else does. A child who shares her animal crackers. A child who wonders why we don't stop the car and hug homeless people. A child who gets sad sometimes. A child who likes to read under a tree by the creek. A child with a good heart, dreams, and a future. Thank you, Michael.
Wow, very powerful. Very, very powerful. You know, I've had an opportunity to read some of your work, some of your poems, and your poems have amazingly detailed titles. What role should a title play for a poem?
The title has always kind of eluded me because I want the title to be the – I want it to encapsulate the essence of the poem, I think. And I think that's kind of daunting sometimes. So I put a lot of effort into making the title as complete, I guess, as it can be. And I just kind of played around with different titles for a long time. And I think that for sometimes the title just kind of comes to me after a while. So I'll usually write the title last, actually.
Mm. You know, for beginning writers, and you're far from being a beginning writer, what is important to consider when titling a poem? What should you consider?
Let's see. What should be important when titling a poem? Well, I think just comes back to the honesty thing, I guess. You know, for me, the title says a lot about the poem. So I think just being honest in your poem and in your title is really important, you know. So that I guess that's what I'd say.
Okay. All right, then.
Writing
from the heart. I like that. Writing from the heart. I was going to share that some poets are active in other creative areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry or literature activities?
I really love playing basketball, and I love hiking and just doing all sorts of outdoors things. So one of my favorite pastimes as a child, and it still is today when I have the opportunity, is just wandering into the woods and playing, you know, and figuring out climbing trees and just walking by the creeks and just kind of like, you know, letting myself get lost in this different world. So I really love being out in nature, but poetry is my true love as well.
All right, I can understand that, and you're great at it. Please share another piece of your work.
I would love to. If possible, I'd love to read a poem from a new collection I'm working on.
Okay, great.
So this poem it's a little longer, and it's from a new collection I'm writing entitled Celestial Nightlight. And I read this really amazing book by Sabrina Ora Mark called Wild Milk. And it's very surreal and very abstract. And the idea of the abstract kind of inspired me to write this poem. So it's called Marshmallow. You used to call me at my home on your purple rotary phone. with the really long extension cord, every evening when the sky turned its darkest black. This was during a time when everything was funny, but no one knew how to laugh. All the living rooms in every city were filled with mothers watching their game shows, spooning peas and custard into their mouths from the microwaves on their laps. All the garages in every suburb were filled with weeping fathers, balancing on their heads like clowns after sex who had run out of cigarettes. We used to watch the fathers from doorway to doorway as they hit something with a hammer that didn't need to be fixed. I kept my phone duct taped to my chest all day, waiting for your call. But when the phone did ring, all sad and quiet, I waited 12 and a half seconds before answering. I knew it was you. You knew it was me. But who wants to admit that to themselves? I'd pick up the phone, and you'd be chewing gum on the other end, like always, and you'd blow another pink bubble out of your mouth, hoping it would float you to me. It never did. As I spit a ball of snot onto the shadows dancing along my wall, you would say from your throat, not your teeth, "Not everything needs to be fixed, Marshmallow. Some houses are built with the wrong bricks. Don't blame the painter for trying to color a hole, Marshmallow. Did you know that your skin crawls at night when you're alone in bed because there are always ladybugs making love underneath your toenails? It's a shame your eyes are on the opposite end of your body, isn't it, Marshmallow? Haven't you ever blinked yourself to life in complete darkness and screamed until the walls closed in around you, trying to get you to shut the hell up? Haven't you ever awoken to sunshine and cried so long your bed sunk deep into the earth, thinking maybe you'd sprout one day like a dandelion if you knew what the dirt tasted like? Some seeds won't turn into grass, Marshmallow. Some seeds will feed the birds. Some seeds will kill the squirrels. Some seeds will explode in your motherfucking stomach. Across the hall, in every cradle, in every upstairs, there was a baby wishing someone would hug him. He didn't know what a hug was, and he didn't know why he wanted one, but he could feel his skin growing old. He knew he hadn't been touched since he was a goldfish. In every attic above every hell, there was a girl kissing her elbows over and over again, reassuring the birds resting on the windowsill that if a tattoo can be removed, so can a scar. I used to walk from room to room while you spoke to me, looking in on the people I loved as they fell apart. The world is a broken light bulb no one cares enough about to sweep up. Please, Marshmallow, lick the glass until your tongue bleeds sunlight. I mouthed along to your words as you said them, as if they were a song and not a suicide. You could never see me over the phone, but you could hear the click of my lips and the snap of my spit matching yours. And when you finally stopped talking, we felt the bubble pop all over our faces. In that silence, we both knew that for the rest of the night, at least we'd still be in love. Thank you.
Wow. We'll be right back. Again, I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Austin Davis. If you'd like to speak with Austin, the telephone number is 646-787-1631. He's a fantastic, talented new poet and has a fantastic, bright future. I know it. Austin.
Hi there. Thanks for all the kind words.
Do you think someone could be a poet
if they don't feel emotions strongly.
I think so, yeah. I think that anyone can be a poet. I think there is art inside everyone. You know, I think that everyone has experienced things and everyone has felt things, even if, you know, not to an extreme amount. But I don't think you have to be a writer to be a poet. I don't think you have to, you know, study poetry to be a poet. I just think you have to yourself fall into those memories and those experiences and all of that. I think anyone can be a writer. Anyone can be a poet.
All right. You know, poets hail from all over the world. Where do you hail from?
Right now, I am living in Mesa, Arizona. I'm from Indiana, but I've lived in Arizona most of my life.
All right. Share another piece of your work.
I would love to. This next poem is called Tell Me About Your Day, and it's a little less sad.
All right.
We meet up. Tell me about your day. We meet up in the library parking lot every night after you get off work at the drugstore. We lay on the roof of my van and stare up at the sky. You call the stars cosmic freckles and tell me that our biology teacher from high school buys extra small condoms and that the V on the middle of a Valium pill looks like a little heart that wants more than anything to become a circle. I nod and laugh and think about how we're both going to die some night in our sleep and we'll never see it coming. The leaves have no idea they're going to fall. The fish have no idea they're going to be eaten by an unhappy family around a big oak table. And you have no idea that getting to hear about your day for 32 and a half minutes every night is what makes me okay with waking up in the morning. I suppose this is the way living has always been. You think you're happy until you meet that person who makes you notice every ache in your chest. Maybe we should drive my van into the book deposit bin and steal all the books our consciences can carry. Maybe we should make out or make love or make up some story about a little home in the mountains with art on the walls, a pineapple pizza cooking in the oven, and 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins playing on a ham radio in the kitchen. In my mind, you're pulling into the driveway in the same car you're driving tonight, about to lay with me by the fireplace on our rug of pink and yellow orchids. Tell me about the last 10 hours of your existence and make me feel like the man who cried into the clouds during a solar eclipse and didn't go blind. Thank you.
You know, all poets have several words that come up over and over again in their work. Words or sentences that they just can't help but use. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use?
Ooh, favorite words. Let's see. I think that more than words, I'm just really obsessed with images. I'm really obsessed with nighttime and, you know, images from my childhood, like creeks and trees and nature and just intimate images to me. More than words, but I think that, you know, in order to describe an image, you have to use words. So, I'm kind of blanking on words that repeat in my poetry a lot, but definitely
right.
these images of childhood and innocence and warmth. I think that warm images come up a lot in my poetry.
Okay. You know, as you think about your book, The World Isn't the Size of Our Neighborhood Anymore, is it available on Amazon.com?
It is. It's available on Amazon, and it's online from Barnes & Noble, or you can get it from my publisher, Weasel Press.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing. If you had to convince a friend or a colleague to read your book, what might you tell them?
You know, I'm not great at the whole marketing or advertising thing, but
right.
I would say, you know, I wrote this book from my heart, and I hope that it makes you feel something. I hope that we can connect through our shared experiences and just from both being humans, you know. I think that that's one really beautiful thing about being an artist and experiencing art is that you get to connect with someone being a human, you know, and to me that's just really beautiful.
Now, if you were given an opportunity to travel on a book signing tour anywhere you wanted to go, What cities or countries would you like to be? Would you like to visit?
Well, actually, I just got back from a book tour right before.
Oh, wow.
Great. I was lucky enough to be able to tour Arizona. So I went to a bunch. I think I went to like 6 or 7 big cities in Arizona and did readings, and that was just super fun. And this summer, depending on what's going on in our country, I was planning on touring California. So that's the next stop for me. But if I had money, first of all, and a way to get to travel, you know, I would love to go to Europe. I think traveling Europe would be amazing. I've always wanted to go to New York and see a big city, you know. But I would love to travel as much as possible. So really anywhere and everywhere, you know. And outside of our world, I more than anything would love to go to space. I think that not for a book tour or anything, but just to experience outer space. You know, I think that would be incredible.
What about outer space intrigues you?
I think that it's the ultimate beauty, and it's also the ultimate fear for me. You know, that really intrigues me. You know, I'd love to experience the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fear and see what I can create out of that. You know, as we're thinking about, you know, words and images that I'm obsessed with, space is one that I'm very obsessed with. So there are a lot of poems in my new book, The World Isn't the Size of Our Neighborhood Anymore, with reference to space and that expanse, you know?
Well, would you share one of those?
Yeah. So this one is called The Sunday Blues. I've blown out all the candles in my house, and I'm sitting naked in the moonlight, imagining that the crickets chirping from my lawn are gossiping about the way the darkness falls through the window in patches of hair along my chest. Maybe I just have the Sunday blues again, but I feel like I'm on the outside looking in. In the same way the years in a wooden table start to look like a solar system when you're just the right kind of sober, or the way an astronaut floating above the world, so far from the sun or New York or any little diner named Diner, sees a cloud evaporate into nothing and goes to bed early because she can't seem to take another bite of her freeze-dried beef hash. Thank you.
Austin, what makes a poem good? I know it's a subjective thing, but what makes a poem good to you?
I think poems that I really fall in love with are poems that feel raw. You know, I think that a poem starts somewhere honest, and, you know, writers use that honesty to create a story out of it. You know what I mean? So I think that rawness in a poem is what really attracts me to a piece of work.
Right. You know, you used the word honesty a number of times tonight, and they say that to see the world with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, artists, and poets. What do you think emerges naturally from your work?
What emerges naturally? Well,
yes.
I think that I want to make someone feel less alone in what they're feeling. You know, so
All right.
I think I write a lot. I write a lot about my own personal experiences with mental health issues and OCD.
Yes.
I think that comes very naturally to me because it's therapy, you know, to express those things. So I find those poems to be very easy, and they come out very naturally when I'm just trying, when I'm feeling bad or when I'm feeling anxious and I just need to make myself feel better, which I think is just as valid, you know, to write something to make yourself feel better as opposed to write something to help other people. I think they're both extremely valid.
Oh, I agree. 100%, I agree. Please share another piece of your work.
Sure, yeah. So this is a new poem I wrote about the current pandemic, and it's called Day 27 of Quarantine. I stand in my bathrobe on the front porch with my coffee. I take out my flask and return it to my pocket as if I were a kid again and everything bad had to be a race. I watch my neighbor stand in his bathrobe across the street, staring at the empty road between us. It makes me sad to think that people are dying every day because of this, and I'm getting drunk in the mornings. I miss hugging people. I wonder if Oprah would call that selfish. Last night, I dreamt I was a dog. I don't remember if I was a Great Dane, a Golden Retriever, or a Cocker Spaniel, but I suppose you can't always know who you are when you're consumed by your search for serotonin. In my dream, I bounced merrily through a sunny neighborhood. I chased rabbits, pissed on trash cans, and moved from house to house, being snuggled and loved by mothers, fathers, and children, bones under their dining room tables, and I think I understood why humans don't want to be human sometimes. At night, I cook chili. I've had chili and gin for 26 straight nights. Why should I change it up now? If I were living in a game show, I'd be pretty damn close to having green slime poured over my head. I walk around the little apartment and press play on all the cassette players hidden from room to room. There's one above the stove, one in between the sofa cushions, one on the balcony, one in the bathtub. All the voices of all the people I love rise around my home. A dozen conversations captured over the years at birthday parties, family gatherings, Christmas dinners, and Tuesday afternoons. I close my eyes as the voices sink into a rhythm. I feel like I've tripped on a Hot Wheels track and stumbled back into my childhood bedroom, some sort of world I can still understand. Aunt Louise wants another slice of pie. My mother is yelling at my little brother to pick up his dirty socks. Grandma needs to take a shit, but someone is throwing up in the bathroom. The kids are playing Sandman in the backyard, and I know it's neither light or dark outside. I take a deep breath and sit back in my chair. I spoon chili into my mouth, gin from my glass. For a split second, I've almost convinced myself they're all really there. Thank you.
Do you think that you were meant to be a poet?
I think that I've always been in love with language. So I think I've been writing poetry and short stories since I was very young. I actually used to make these little homemade chapbooks. So I'd get some construction paper and draw a little cover, and then I'd staple together a story, and then I'd make like 20 of them and give them out to all my friends and family. And I just, from a young age, I've always loved writing and sharing my writing. It's always felt very natural to me to want to create something and share it with other people.
So does knowing that your poems are published and out there in the world, and you may have answered this question, and out there in the world validate your being a poet, or are you content knowing they're just out of your system?
No, I don't feel validated by having publications or anything, but I do like the idea that since they're out there, maybe they're connecting with people. But I think that I've always been a poet, even before I had some poems published. You know, I think I was a poet when I was 8 years old writing a poem under my bed, you know, and I think I'm going to be a poet when I'm 85 writing a poem on the front porch. You know, I think that it doesn't come down to publications. It comes down to just you writing and creating and being yourself, you know.
So would you view this being advice you'd give to an aspiring poet to just be themselves?
Yeah, definitely. I would just say write as much as you can and read everything you can get your hands on. I think that's the reason I fell in love with writing is because I read so much. But, yeah, just, you know, don't try to be someone you're not. Be yourself and show the world who you are.
Well, you know, as we talk about the world and as we both know, there's so much happening with the pandemic, with other issues that are just causing so much strife and grief throughout the world. What do you see as being the role of a poet in modern-day society?
I think that art can really show people that there's a brighter future on the horizon. And I think it can also make people feel less alone in what they're feeling. So I think that especially in times of crisis, art is incredibly valuable. And I think that all our poets need to just keep creating and keep showing people that we're going to get through this, but I understand how you're feeling.
Right. Very nice. Very nice. Let's take a brief break and we'll be right back. Austin, please share another piece of your work.
Thank you very much. This next piece is titled, it's kind of a strange title, but it's titled March 14th, 3:47 a.m., Edgewood Circle. And that was the location, time, and date of when I wrote this poem. I'll start. We shared a smoke in the early morning, walking down a street of frozen gravel as the moon sank into a lip of blue clouds. We flicked our ashes and talked about how cold it gets when winter is ending. A dog barked in the distance. Our shoes crunched against the rocks like a voice making its way out of a mouth of broken teeth, the way the leaves fall in a perfect circle on those rare occasions when the wind finds a way to twist itself into a finger. I stretched my body into a shadow and picked you an orange from the top of our neighbor's tree. I thought about our neighbor, how he loves his wife, but goes on a few too many business trips. We walked home in silence, me spitting tobacco and you dropping orange peels in shapes I'd never seen. The dog kept barking. The moon kept falling. You stopped and squeezed the orange the way outer space chokes a naked throat. A stream of juice washed through your fist, and you began to cry. I began to cry. I held you and breathed in your smoke. You held me and made my neck sticky. Our neighbor's dog fell asleep across the street as we kissed each other in the dark. You wiped your nose and slapped a mosquito on your arm. I cleared my throat. We made our way through the same yard we used to lay a sheet on and watch the stars from when we were too young to know that each star we could see was bigger and brighter than the sun. I kissed your forehead. You crawled into bed like a Dalmatian who had seen too many fires burn homes down to their bones. I walked out onto the patio, another cigarette, praying that tomorrow it would rain so loud and for so long we wouldn't have to think or talk about what is or what was ever again. Thank you.
Wow. Now, that was beautiful. Really, really, was really, really nice. Do you
Thank
have
you
a
so
writing
much.
Group or community of writers that you share your work with?
I am incredibly lucky because I have an amazing group of other writers that I share my work with. Yeah, so I'm in a capstone poetry class right now at ASU. And every Monday for 3 hours, we all workshop each other's poems. And right now, the class is actually on Zoom. Yeah, it's amazing. Right now, the class is on Zoom because we can't meet in person, you know. But it's just so amazing to get to share your work with other people and have them give you comments. And I think especially right now, I, for one, have been feeling kind of lonely lately, you know. And it's been really nice to – you know, for 3 hours every week, get to share what I've created with other people and get to see what they've created and just, you know that we're all kind of in this thing together and we're all feeling uncertain and scared at times. And, you know, we're all working our way through it in different ways, you know? So I feel really, really blessed to have that community.
Right. Well, here's a shout out from me to the crew in terms of your class. So congratulations to everyone in terms of being able to share your work. That is so, so important. So does writing energize or exhaust you?
It energizes me. Oh, it is the the most amazing drug in the world. You know, it helps me. It helps me feel better, you know, first of all. But it also, it's just the most amazing feeling when you have this thought or this idea and you're able to translate it onto the page. I feel really energized when I'm able to successfully do that in my mind. You know, when I'm able to have this idea or I'm obsessed with this image or something and I'm able to translate that into a poem, I feel really amazing. So, no, it's never exhausted me.
All right, very nice. What do you view as being the most difficult part of the artistic process, of your process? What's the most difficult part? And conversely, what's the easiest part?
I think that whenever you have writer's block, it's very frustrating because you want to create, but sometimes you just can't, you know. And I think that's the hardest part, is getting through those rough parts where it doesn't seem like you're creating anything valuable, or in your mind, you know, you think to yourself, oh, this isn't valuable, or, oh, I'm not doing what I want to do. You know, I think that's very hard, and it really brought me down for a little bit whenever I'm in those parts, you know, because it's hard to get through that. But conversely,
yes,
you know, once you get through that, I think the most amazing part is when you're able to just be inspired all the time and just write. I've had portions of my life where I've just kept a little notebook in my pocket all day for months at a time, and I've just been writing the whole day. And even if it's complete garbage, you know, stuff that I'm not going to use in a poem, it's I really like that feeling of having the gears moving all the time. And I don't think I have that feeling always, but when I'm in that mode for a long period of time, I feel really at home in my skin, and I feel really at home in who I am, you know, and I just feel comfortable, I guess.
Now, are you on Facebook or Twitter, and how does that fit, if you are, into your writing life?
I am, yeah. So I have a Facebook, and I think my Twitter is Austin_Davis17, and my Instagram is AustinWDavis1. But yeah, I started onto social media a couple of years ago just because I wanted to share my work. But I like it. I like being able to put some work out there and have people see it. And I also like, you know, getting to see other people's work that I wouldn't have met if it weren't for social media. But for me, at least, I really like to limit myself on social media. I try to, because I think I can get into a habit of spending too much time on it. So I think it's all a balance. You know, I really like going on social media for a little bit, sharing my work and experiencing others' work, and just letting it be that, and then going about my day without it, I guess.
All right, all right. Well, share another piece of your work. Really, this is great. Share another piece of your work.
Thank you so much. So this next poem is also from a new collection I'm writing called Celestial Nightlight, and it's kind of short, but it's called Chandelier. I bumped my head once on a chandelier hanging over the dining room table in our old apartment. I was trying to twist a flickering bulb back into place. The plastic diamonds chimed madly, and you let out a quick nasally laugh before touching my leg and asking if I was all right. I didn't cry, so we drank wine on our dark purple couch, and you fell asleep in a little ball listening to the weatherman talk about how much snow we were going to wake up to. The bottle was empty, and I was all out of shit to smoke. A Ken doll-looking motherfucker on the TV interrupted the woman to his right and said something about how afraid we should all be of what might happen next. I made my way to my feet and staggered back to the dining room as if I were paddling a canoe through choppy waters. I took off my socks and stared at my overgrown toenails for longer than I should have. I climbed back onto the wooden table. Standing up there, the soft glow from the den licked at my chest like a patient lover. In the dark, the chandelier looked like a celestial nightlight, what a small child might imagine the universe is. I bent my knees and jumped. Thank you.
How has your idea of poetry, of what poetry is, and what poetry can do, changed since you began writing poetry?
I think that when I first started writing, really seriously, you know, I was around 12 years old, and I got really obsessed with writing. And I think then it was kind of just, I didn't do any editing, really. I was just writing a bunch. And I'd write something once and be done with it, you know, and I'd write another thing and be done with it and just throw it out there. But as I've grown older, I've really enjoyed the editing process because, you know, for me, the first draft is always kind of just letting it get out there and not holding myself back. And then the second draft, when I look at it the next morning or something, is taking out all the parts I don't like and using parts that I do like to springboard off in a new direction. And I think I've really fell in love with editing, which I didn't like at all when I was a lot younger. But so yeah, it's just kind of transitioning into that right now, I think. And being very precise with every word is something I'm really falling in love with as well. You know, I hadn't really thought about that when I was first beginning, but after taking a lot of classes and reading a lot and just kind of thinking about what I want my poems to look like, I realized that it's kind of like a puzzle, you know, like you're trying to fit every piece perfectly to create this little poem. And I really love that idea and that challenge.
So what happens if it's not perfect? You can't find every piece of the puzzle. What happens then?
Well, so sometimes if it's just not working, I'll kind of just put that poem away and work on something else. Or, you know, if I don't like it and it's not really working and I've just tried a lot and it's just not really going anywhere, I'll put it away and maybe look at it again in a week or two with fresh eyes, you know, or maybe I won't return to it. I think that sometimes it's just super valuable to create, not for the purpose of putting it in a book or trying to share it with people or anything, just creating it solely for the sake of you wanting to make something, you know?
All right. So as you think about your body of work, all three books, all the writing over the years, what are you trying to communicate with your art?
I think that I'm trying to communicate that in whatever you're feeling, whatever you're going through, you're not alone. You know, I think that that's one thing I can do with my art is show people that I've experienced what you've experienced to a certain degree, or I've experienced something similar. You know, hear about, listen to what I've been through, and maybe it can help you in what you're going through.
Well, share another piece of your work, please, sir.
Awesome. This is another poem I've written about the pandemic, and it's a little more hopeful than the last one. It's called "This Poem Is for the Love." This poem is for the children whose schools have closed, the children who rely on whatever their pocket change can buy them in the cafeteria to get them through the day. This poem is for the people who live through a lifetime of war and are as afraid of going outside on this still spring night as they were back then. This poem is for every family from my city to your city, to every city neither of us have ever been to or heard of. This poem is for the mother who lost her job and has to feed three kids. This poem is for the boy who searches for smiley faces in the raindrops sticking to his windows, even when the monsters in his head are trying to find their way to his eyes and he's alone and the world feels fast asleep. This poem is for the homeless, the scared, the lonely. This poem is for the dead, the dying, the hungry. This poem is for you, and this poem is for me. If you press your hand to your heart, I'll press my hand to mine. We can both feel the rhythm of being alive, and that's all the reason I need day inside. Thank you.
Oh, wow. That one really touched me.
Oh, I'm so glad.
We're going through so much, Austin, and it's scary. It's very scary. It's very, very scary.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, I've been extremely frightened and scared and uncertain lately, and that's why I've kind of turned to writing, you know, because it makes me feel better to create something and put my feelings down on paper, I guess, you know?
Yes, I do. I do. You know, we're at the end of the program, and I've really enjoyed this hour with you. When people hear your work, I'm sure they usually want more. You've had an opportunity to travel throughout Arizona. I'm sure people want more. What's next for you as a poet?
I really just want to travel as much as I can and share my work with as many people as possible. So, you know, I'd really love to do a tour outside of Arizona, and I'd really love to go outside of the U.S. And really, I just want to keep creating. So I'm working on this new book called Celestial Nightlight, and I'm just very excited to see how this project turns out, because I think with every book, my writing becomes a little more me, you know, and it becomes a little more, you know, I really love that idea. You know, I like this collection a lot, but I really like the new book I'm writing as well. And I really like the idea of trying to create, you know, this book where all the poems lead into the next and everything feels cohesive, you know? So that's kind of my next goal, is to just keep creating and keep sharing and keep traveling and just keep meeting people and doing stuff like this, you know?
Well, I want to say thank you so much for joining me. You're an incredible young man. And as I said earlier in the program, your future is bright and your poetry is fantastic.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on your show and just, you know, letting me share my work and talk with you. It's been a really amazing experience for me to come on your show.
Well, thank you. And I'd like you to come back. May is National Mental Health Awareness Month, and I plan to put together a program where people from all walks of life call in. It's an open mic. And just share poetry from their hearts about what it's like to live in this pandemic and what it's like to live in general. So I'd like you to come back again and maybe share some more of your work.
I will definitely, yeah. What Do you know which day in March or which day in May? Or yeah, May.
I've yet to put together the date of the program, but I'll most definitely let you know because I'd like you to share your work on the program. All right.
Thank you so much. I'd love to come back and share my work. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll be back next week with another famous poet. And have a good week, everybody, and be safe. All right, good night. Good night, Austin.
Good night. Thank you very much.
All right.